scuba goats under the sea. The podcast for the inquisitive diver.
Hey there, dive buddies, and welcome to the show. Did you ever wonder where the term tech diving came from? Well, my next guest was completely oblivious to anything beyond open water diving when he first became certified way back in 1976. However, he became the guy to coin the phrase. Michael Menduno has been diving and reporting on technical diving since 1990 when he founded the Aquacore magazine and its sister publication, Technical Diver. A reporter, technologist, and a member of the board of directors for the Historical Diving Society, Michael is the editor-in-chief of Global Underwater Explorers online magazine, In Depth. He is also a contributing editor for Dan Europe's Alert Diver and X-Ray magazine, and he also writes for Deeper Blue. And to top it off, Michael also worked with Captain Billy Deans to set up the first tech diving centre in the world, based in Key West, which became a global mecca for tech diver training. Michael, welcome to the show, sir. How are you after Oztech? I'm assuming with all this lot, you're going straight back into the editorial driving seat.
Oh, I am. No, we having a monthly magazine is, a taskmaster. You have to stay. Who thought of doing it monthly? I don't know. I did. Crazy. Yeah. But so that has kept me busy. And we're in the process, of course, of rolling out Rebreather Forum 4, which will be held next April in Malta, an industry and scientific symposium. So I've been working hard on that to get that all put together and get our new website up and prepare for DEMA. Which is coming up in 2 weeks. So I've been busy.
Right. Are you doing any kind of presentations at DEMA, or have you got a stand there?
I'm coordinating. I'm a board member with the Historical Diving Society, and we are awarding the Pioneer Award this year posthumously to Sheck Exley, legendary cave diver. So we have a big exhibit that we've put together, a historical cave diving exhibit with some of Sheck's red dry suit and Goodman belly bag and Dr. X deco program and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then we'll be doing on the tech floor, I'll be coordinating. Well, it's supposed to be a talk about Sheck, but we have a little video to show, and then we're going to make it more stories by people who knew Sheck.
Okay.
So, I'm kind of gathering the people who knew him, and we'll all be able to share some anecdotes and stuff like that. And then that night, the second day of DEMA, second day, there'll be the Nogi Awards, and that's where this presentation will be made. So.
Happy days. So, definitely keeping you busy then. Hey, we should back it up a little bit and just let the listeners know who the hell you are, because obviously you'll be known in the tech world and over that side of the world especially, but down here in Oz, you're a dude from California. So,
Well, I self-identify as a journalist. I've been writing and a journalist for a long time, 40 years now, going on 30 years. I got started, actually my writing career got started around the same time as my diving career. So the first story I ever published was a diving story, and I just kind of kept at it from there. Published a magazine called Aquacore back in the 1990s, Aquacore, the journal for technical diving. Mm. And in fact, I coined the term technical diving. We needed something to call it. And high tech diving didn't really fit, and advanced diving didn't really fit. So technical, from technical climbing, I had some friends who are rock climbers. So I've done that, launched the tech conferences. We're seeing some of those today, Oztech and Eurotech and Baltic Tech. Well, the original tech conferences were I did them in the States, and then we did one over in the UK, actually with Bernard Eaton in conjunction with the BSAC show, and then one over in Asia before ADEX with Asian Diver. So kind of got that going. And then also back in the day, that was rebreathers were just coming into the sports market. Mm. So we launched the Rebreather Forum to get the industry and science people together to look at rebreather technology and how we are going to adopt this for our own without, hurting too many people in the process.
Yeah.
So, and that continued the Rebreather Forum 1 and 2. There was a third one about a decade ago that I didn't put on, and now I'm putting on Rebreather Forum 4, helping to organize it. So, And I'm a tech diver, cave diver, tech diver, back from the early days when mixed gas was just coming into the market, back in the late 80s, early 1990s. So,
let's talk about, just be careful with your banging on the table there, mate. It's just coming through on the microphone. It's, you're an animated Italian and it's coming through on your desk.
Exactly. I'm just... Exactly. My hands speak for themselves.
Yeah. I used to do it all the time. I tend to grip myself out to, just to stop myself doing it. So back in the, right at the start, actually, how the hell did you get into diving? Let's go there.
I grew up watching Jacques Cousteau and Mike Nelson of Sea Hunt. So I was always motivated by, you know, about the ocean. I grew up in near a lake, Lake Michigan. I didn't learn to dive when I was a youngster, but I learned to swim. I was an avid swimmer. And it wasn't until I came out to graduate school at Stanford out in California, where we have the lovely Monterey Bay world-class diving, that I decided to, that I needed to learn to dive. And I still remember my first breath underwater on a regulator at Browley's Pool in Redwood City. And it was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I mean, I still remember to this day. And that just hooked me. The night before my first open water dive at Lover's Point in Monterey, I watched Jaws, which had just come out. I was hungry for anything ocean. So Jaws, you know, and I went to see that the night before my first open water dive. And of course, there are great whites in Monterey. I have a friend actually who was bit by one. So it may for an interesting. I would recommend that to people. You know, boom, 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 boom.
That explains why you're an air pig on your first dive, 18 minutes in, and your time to go up.
Right. Right. Waiting for that thing to come around the corner. So, yeah. And at that point, man, I love diving. So I continued on. I got my advanced open water. I remember that pretty well. My rescue course, my Paddy Dive Master course. And around that time, my career, well, from graduate school, I ended up going to do an internship in Washington, D.C., as a technologist, actually. So I had to put diving on hold for a while and went to Washington and then picked it up again when I came back.
What's a technologist? What's a technologist?
Technologist. I went to work. We had a program. I was in a program called at the time it was called the Engineering Economic Systems Department at Stanford. Mm. And it was a cross-disciplinary program with math and modeling and looking at computer networking and macroeconomics and things like that. We had a relationship with people on the Hill and NOAA. So I went to work for Senator Ted Stevens, and I was an economist on his staff and his representative to the Office of Technology Assessment, which was a congressional office that analyzed and looked at the impact of new technologies. To inform the senators so they could make good, you know, rational policy decisions, legislative decisions.
So
that's what I did. So I was focused on technology.
Yeah. So you were the young kid that knew everything about new technology while the old farts that were running the show didn't have a clue.
Something like that. Yeah. So,
that's how I feel nowadays with my phone. Yeah.
Right. It's the youngsters who know how to do all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
The power users. So, but you know, that perspective, and then I came back to California and I was in the computer industry, before getting back into diving. Mm. So, I actually brought that perspective with me into diving because what was happening at the time was that there was new technology. It wasn't really new. It had been around, developed by the military, the U.S. Navy in the 30s. And I'm speaking of mixed gas technology. Mm-hmm. They developed it because they needed to go deeper to rescue sailors from downed subs. Then in the 1960s, the commercial divers, you know, went to mix because they're getting to the limits of air diving and the oil fields were getting deeper than, you know, 70 meters, 80 meters. Mm-hmm. And, so they went to mix. And then So what was happening is people started, because of the limits of air diving, people were starting to experiment with mixed gas diving. And it seemed really clear to me that it was parallel to the computer revolution that had gone on. Now, you're old enough to probably remember the personal computer revolution.
Oh, yeah.
Governments had computers to start. They were the first ones. And then same paradigm. Commercial industry got computers. And it wasn't until, Apple, Steve Jobs and Apple came along and said, gee, we should give this technology to consumers and see what they do with it. Mm. And that's exactly what happened in the diving world. Mixed gas technology moved from government to commercial to being scaled down to the consumer, the sport market. And we were the guinea pigs. Unfortunately, unlike the government and commercial diving that had tons of money, centralized control, protocols and standards, the sport diving community, it was just a do-it-yourself, you're on your own, kids.
Yeah.
And as a result, there were actually a lot of fatalities in the early days from mixed gas diving because people were just figuring out how to do it. It took us as a community a decade to sort that out.
Yeah.
We eventually did. But, we paid the price.
Yeah. So, right back in those days, because if you were starting to effectively, intelligently play with this gear, were you just left to do your own thing? There was no kind of guidance. Were you mapping the way forward?
Pretty much. I mean, what I found at the time. So I came back, from Washington, very much wanted to get into diving, and there was actually an incident that pushed me into tech diving. There was a citizen science group called the Cordell Expeditions. Mm. It was a group of Silicon Valley software engineers. They bought a boat. They were all divers. And so they were doing, bio essays, surveys of the deep seamounts off the coast of Monterey in California. Mm-hmm. They were looking for volunteers for an expedition. So, but you had to have a dry suit, had to dive doubles, etc. So I got myself a set of doubles. I got myself a dry suit. I went and tried out, did some dives with these people, and I got accepted. And it was just it was just incredible. They were doing dives to, it was like 50, 60 meter dives on air, no gas for deco. I mean, it was, looking back now, but I was just thrilled with it. And back in those days, remember, the story was there's nothing to see below 40 meters, and you should never do decompression dives, never, ever. So these guys were going deeper than 40 meters. There was lots of stuff to see, and they were doing decompression dives. So this got me to start looking around and realize that there were all these small groups, pockets of individuals in the open water community, the cave community, and they were doing these dives, but nobody was talking about it because you weren't supposed to do it. It was taboo. And in fact, none of the publications would talk about it. I finished this expedition with Cordell and wanted to do a story about it. Mm. I must have gone to 10 or 15 magazines and everyone turned me down.
Really?
And said, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to be doing those kind of dives. So eventually I found a brave soul, Ken Lois from Discover Diving. And so he published my story, but now without all sorts of, warnings. This is beyond the realm of sport diving. Never do this, never do that. But that got me going and realizing that there are all these groups doing this, but nobody was talking. Everyone was just trying to figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
Going to commercial diving tables, reading the U.S. Navy manuals, stuff like that. So I was hungry for information and there was none. So I thought, hell, I'll start a newsletter. I'll start a magazine or a newsletter to talk about this stuff because I was so interested. And that led me to, founding AquaCore, my first magazine, and getting going and ending up pulling, really started getting these communities to start talking together because we were really very unsafe because no one could compare notes or, there's just no information.
Yeah.
So that was my goal from the get-go.
And what year was this? What year did you start with AquaCore?
This was, I launched AquaCore in January 1990.
Yeah.
Back then, DEMA was in January every year.
Okay.
So that was my first DEMA. And I brought my magazine. It was like, do you deep dive? Do you decompression dive? And I remember a group led by Al Hornsby from Paddy kind of marched over to my booth and they looked at my signage and magazines and kind of pierced through it and then stormed off, you know, sort of upset, you know. Because again, you weren't supposed to, even though people were doing these dives, you weren't supposed to talk about it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, had some logic too, because you didn't want to entice people who shouldn't be doing it, who had no experience or et cetera, to be trying these kinds of dives, you know, likely to just get themselves hurt or killed. So
yeah, and I don't know. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but back in 1990, I would assume that there's not many kind of guidance or standards on that type of diving. So the agencies are going to be fearful.
There were
of
no
it.
Classes yet.
Yeah.
Right. There were no agencies training it. I lucked into, there was a guy named Captain Billy Deans at Key West Diver. He had a dive center called Key West Diver in Key West. His longtime deep air diver, his best friend, John Ornsby, died on the Andrea Doria on a deep air dive in 1986. Got tangled up in the wreck. Billy ended up recovering his body. They weren't diving together. They were diving two different teams.
Yeah.
Billy recovered the body. They actually filmed it coming up, bringing up on the Wahoo. And that convinced Billy that there had to be a better way to do these kind of dives.
Yeah.
And so he started investigating, hooked up with Dr. Bill Hamilton, who had already been helping some of the cave diving community like Bill Stone and Chuck Exley and some of the early WKPP people like Bill Gavin and Bill Main.
Mm.
So he created a tech center, the first tech diving center in Key West.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there in 1991 training with them. And the way you trained in those days, you came out, you said, I'm coming out for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And you learned to mix gas and you learned to carry stage bottles and you just learned how to do it, kind of apprenticing with Billy. And this, again, was Dick Rakowski was around with the International Association of Nitrox Divers.
Mm-hmm.
This was before Tom Mount joined. So that was it. You just learned from other people who knew how to do it. Bill Stone with the famous Wakulla Springs 1987 project. I mean, again, 30 people, but they were just figuring out what to do and how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and Bill eventually wrote his book, which was a Bible for us in the early days.
Yeah.
The agency started coming in. I think Tom actually formed IANTD, Tom Mount, this would be, in 1992. And then from there, it was Andy, American Nitrox Divers International, INTD, and then a couple of years, and PSI, Hal Watts, with Professional Scuba Association International. And then a few years later, I think in 1995, Brett Gillum and Joe Odom formed TDI, Technical Diving International. And then from there was training agencies.
Yeah, that's when people started to really focus on how to train to do this type of diving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it was a bit of a wild, it was definitely the Wild West back then. A lot of people were dying. I mean, this was a real concern to us at AquaCore, is that, you know, there were all these spate of fatalities.
Mm.
1992 was particularly bad. There was a series of deaths in cave country on the Andrea Doria, and then a famous, well-known father and son team, the Rouses, Chris and Chrissy Rouse, died diving a wreck called the Yoo-Hoo, which later became the U-867 that John Chatterton and Richie Kohler had found. It was a, you know, 60, 70-meter dive. They were diving it on air, even though they were mixed certified, but they wanted to save some money.
Wow.
They both lost their lives.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of pressure for the tech community to get its act together, you know, and stop killing people. You know, people had to stop diving. And so that was the first tech conference that year in January 93. And that was the focus. Like, how do we do this safer? Really, that was AquaCore's focus from the beginning, you know, safety and performance. Those are the two things. And you really can only dive as deep as you can dive deep safely.
Yeah.
Right. Otherwise, particularly for sport divers, otherwise it takes all the fun out of it. You know, if you get hit or don't come, you know, get hurt or don't come.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing we've got to point out here as well, or the important element here as well, for those that are, you know, younger than you and I in the 90s,
the only form of information that you could get was through books and by people with experience. It wasn't by jumping on Google and just asking a question to find out what shit someone's put on Wikipedia.
Right.
Yeah. So
we're on dial-up modems. Remember those?
Oh, Jesus. I had a games console in the 80s. It was a Commodore 64, and it took 45 minutes to load with a scratching screen that usually failed anyway. Right. Just to watch a shitty pixelated plane go across.
Yeah. So printed matter was the issue. I was under constant pressure to get the issues out quicker. It was always hard because I had to raise the money, you know, pay the printer. I had to get advertising, et cetera. But people were hungry for information back then. And again, you couldn't just go online. There were forums, right? CompuServe and other forums, text-based forums, but there wasn't a visual web like there is today.
Yeah. And so, do you remember the first issue? I mean, you must remember the first issue. Have you still got a copy of the first issue?
Well, of course I do. Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't have a lot of issues left, but the first issue is called Under Pressure.
Yes.
And the lead story was let's call it high-tech diving. This was Bill Hamilton's term for it.
Right.
It really wasn't high technology. It was, you know, technology that had been around for 60 years, but it was new to the sport community.
Yeah.
And so it sort of took off from that. I had a lot of great advisors, people like Bill Hamilton, Bill Stone, others who got involved with us.
For days. And
heady times.
Yeah. At what point was there a turning point where all of a sudden there was a kind of an explosion of attention on the magazine? Because this is clearly something that's significantly new and very important within the diving industry.
Yeah. What happened, interesting, and it involves the name tech diving too. So in the early days, again, we call it advanced diving, you know, high-tech diving. We didn't know what to call it. But there was a great upset. The recreational diving community was not happy with tech diving coming out of the closet. Skin Diver magazine went on a whole rampage against nitrox, against deep diving, et cetera. And it was fueled by fatalities, you know, that there were fatalities. Mm. And so they didn't want anything to do with tech diving. So we needed something to call it. It clearly wasn't recreational diving, what to call it. And we cast about, and as I mentioned earlier, I have friends who are rock climbers, technical climbing, where you'd rate a rock face. This is a 5.10 or a 5.8, you know, based on degrees of difficulty. And it just seemed to have the right ring for what we were doing, technical diving. And I even envisioned a time where you would be able to rate dives based on their degree of difficulty. You know, why not? So in our winter, the fall of 1991, I published, you know, I used the technical diving on the magazine. So what happened was Patty, meanwhile, was getting all these queries from people as this was coming out. Like, when's Patty going to do some of this? So that fall, Drew Richardson, who was then a vice president of the Penn, of course, he's now the CEO, penned an article in the Undersea Journal, which, you know, had huge distribution, called Technical Diving, Does Patty Have Its Head in the Sand? I think I was quoted in the article and stuff. And that put it on the map. You know, it was like, boom, that cemented the name and got everyone is like, what's technical diving? You know, so that was like 1992. So that was really an inflection point up that people started getting into.
You must be quite proud of that little element as well. You know, what's technical diving? Well, let me tell you something.
I became sort of the, I don't know, the archivist and the scribe of technical diving. So, you know, just writing about it. And you know, the whole philosophy with the magazine too was to aim it. We were aimed at the Bill Stones and the Billy Deans and the Sheck Exleys and those people to read it and those people to write for it. Mm. And then my strategy was everyone else could just you know, if they were interested, they would move their way up. So that was kind of the approach I took with AquaCore. And it's actually an approach I take with my magazine today, In-Depth, is sort of AquaCore for the 21st century. At least I think of it that way. But that same formula, you know, to write for the people who really care about this and are, you know, really into it.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
It's the same reason I started this podcast, just for, you know, to feed inquisitive minds. And it's so addictive.
Yeah,
exactly. So addictive. So that was a nice little lead-in. Let's talk about In-Depth. When did that one first come into play?
So In-Depth, we're just completing our fourth year. Mm-hmm. It's a project, you know, after AquaCore went out of business in 1996, I went on a hiatus, just being a reporter. I wrote for Wired Magazine, Scientific American, Newsweek, a lot of the business magazines, et cetera, and came back to diving about 2010. I started writing again. And Jared Jablonski was from GUE, the founder of GUE, was an old friend of mine from back in the day. And we started talking about the possibility of creating a new sort of magazine that wouldn't, you know, GUE had its membership magazine called Quest. It still does.
Yeah.
But kind of a broader magazine for the whole tech community. And we got talking about it. And 2018, it was sort of time. And so we just decided to push it out there. It would be an online magazine, a monthly magazine, and hosted by GUE, but not for GUE necessarily. It really is aimed at the whole broader tech and mission-oriented diving community, scientific diving, that sort of thing. And yeah, so we started it, monthly magazine, and here we are 4 years later. We started without any advertising or sponsors for the first year, and then the second year we added sponsors, and then this last year I added a team of people. Prior to that, it was just myself, and I had a couple people to help me implement it, Amanda White, who was the GUE marketing director at the time. And then this last spring, I brought on some people, a production director, an art director, et cetera. So now we have about four or five of us producing the magazine and loving
it. Yeah, and it's obviously keeping you rather busy.
Yeah, it is. And it's the only tech diving magazine on the planet. I mean, all the other magazines, of course, have tech in them, but they're general purpose. And so we're kind of freed from that. We're just focused on tech and kind of high-end diving and the likes.
Yeah. What about the people that might be listening to the show right now that aren't necessarily tech-orientated just yet but are starting to get inquisitive about it? Is In-Depth a good place for them to start?
Very much so. I mean, we, you know, good question. Yeah. You know, if you were just starting, it will point you. All our articles, we've taken this approach on purpose. It's information dense. So we have hyperlinks to stories. Each issue, we have each story, we have a dive deeper section. So you can, if you're interested in this, you can go further, et cetera. So I think it is a good resource for people who are interested in this.
Yeah.
We don't pull any punches and we don't dumb stuff down at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, magazines tend to do that in diving. I don't know why. You know, just because someone's a new diver doesn't mean they're a new human.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah. And you have to kind of make it real simple. A lot of, you know, obviously our sport tends to be more well-heeled people, more educated people, et cetera, because it takes money to be a diver. So we, you know, have a lot of intelligent, cool people in our world. And so we try to appeal to those people.
Yeah, and to be fair, the people that stay within diving and do it as a pastime that they very quickly get addicted to tend to have the mindset of being able to understand a little bit of the technical structure of the components you're using. So
I was going to say, one of the things I love about tech diving in particular, it makes it a little different than recreational, maybe, that it just has all the elements, right? It's got science, it's got technology, it's got spirit, it's got just the zen of being there in the water. So to me, some of the academic aspects of diving, physiology and everything else, kind of add to the richness of it for me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, back in the day, in the early days, it was sort of binary. You know, there was recreational diving and technical diving and nothing in between.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think things have changed just because of our community's experience and knowledge. You know, and back then, you'd walk into a store and ask about helium or oxygen, you know, oxygen fill, what's that? You know, we don't do oxygen. Whereas now you can walk into pretty much any dive center, dial up your mix, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's more a continuum these days. You know, there's just sport diving, and it really kind of depends on what you want to do. You know, how deep do you want to go? What do you want to go see? And if you want, you want to do that? Well, here's the training and tools you need. You know, it's sort of wide open to fill people's imaginations and their interests, you know, to.
Yeah. And that's a point.
To go wherever they want. It's all available.
Yeah. And that was a point I'm going to come on there as well, that, you know, that mass gap, that chasm between technical and recreational isn't there anymore. You know, I've only got to go down to Chowder Bay here in Sydney or Manly Beach, and you can see CCRs lined up for recreational divers that are just going to go and have a play for a few hours. It's no longer a massive bridge.
Yeah, we've talked about that. You know, 10 years ago, actually, at Rebreather Forum 3, you probably remember this, there was a big push on the recreational rebreather. Yeah. You know, we save maybe closed circuit rebreathers, which use pure oxygen and a little more complicated for tech diving. Yeah. But you'd have semi-closed rebreathers, which just sort of bleed the gas in and use a single gas like nitrox. They're much easier, much simpler to use. And so the thinking was that was, you know, why wouldn't you be on a rebreather? It's quieter. You get extended gas. But it never really materialized. I think it still might. One of the things about diving that's interesting, it's a conundrum. Most of the world is water, 70%, and increasingly more as everything melts.
Yeah. Right?
We are the people that go underwater, so we're really important in some ways, but we're just like this tiny little group of, you know, 0.00001 humans.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, there's no investment in diving. There's no money or very little money. And therefore, product life cycles, you know, you buy a rebreather, it's good for 6 or 8 or 10 years. I don't know. You know, whereas our computers, our watches, you know, have 6 month life cycle of a year,
yeah.
Right? And they're old. So diving moves very slowly. Just again, because there's not hundreds of millions of dollars poured into it. A colleague of mine, Darcy Kieran, with the Business of Diving Institute, estimates that the whole diving market is about, if you take away travel, because that is a little more complicated, it's about $4 billion a year of equipment and training. $4 billion. That's like iPhone sales for a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's
tiny.
So it's taken a while for things to progress, but they are, you know, like nitrox. I mean, nitrox has become pretty ubiquitous. I mean, there's not really a good reason to dive air ever. But though people still do for finances and, you know, just location and stuff. But I think we're moving in that way where for the small percentage of us who breathe underwater,
It's actually a bit of an eye opener when you think of it on a larger scale like that, isn't it? I think there's a lot of divers, yeah. You know, you look at, like I'm one of the guys that assists in running the group in Texas. There's like over 7,500 divers just in Texas and over 4,000 here in Sydney. And you think, oh, there's a lot more people than what you think. But then when you put it on that form, you know, 4 billion a year, that's it. Yeah. Not that big at all.
I think they were estimating, he was estimating that same study, about 7 million active divers globally, which sounds like a huge number.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it gets into fuzziness, right? The person who dives once a year on holiday or twice,
yeah.
Which is great. There are a lot of those. You know, a lot of those, right? But dedicated diving every week divers,
yeah.
there aren't. You know, we're a small population.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because it's so fun.
Yeah.
I think everyone will want to do it.
Well, there must be a lot of numbers in there as well that are just people that have done their ticket when they've been backpacking in Asia 25 years ago or whatever. And,
yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, speaking of diving, we're talking about the magazines. What about you? What are you still diving? Do you get a chance to get out and go diving?
I am. No, I definitely do. I've gone back and slowly, I went back a few years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, and because I had been cave diving for a while and got my recertified as a full cave diver. Mm. So I love cave diving. Out here, shipwreck diving, certainly. So I try to dive as much as I can, but it's not always as much as I want. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, still active diving. I think last year, the year before I've been trying to do my GUE certs as well since I work with GUE. So I got my Tech One and et cetera, and just got recertified on the Liberty Rebreather. I'd been certified about a decade ago on the AP, the Inspiration. And so recently just did the Dive Soft and waiting for my unit to show up.
Okay. What do you think of the Dive Soft? Must be pretty sexy.
I think it's a really great machine. They're a very innovative company. Mm. And, I think they've helped move rebreather technology forward. And all rebreather technology has advanced, rebreathers came out about the late 1990s. Mm. Martin Parker's AP Inspiration was in 1998, and I think the Kiss, 1999, followed by everyone else. I mean, today there are 25, 26 manufacturers globally. Wow. For a small market. Mm-hmm. So some of them are very small. But they've gotten much more reliable than 20 years ago, I think rebreathers have.
Yeah. I think that's it. As technology advances and, people learn more about it, the techie geeks get their nose into how things work. It's a no-brainer. It's just going to get safer.
Yeah. And we've gotten safer, too. It's not just been the equipment. I mean, I would say most of the problems, probably diving in general, but certainly with rebreathers, are human factors, right? Mm. It's not the machine breaks and you die. It's you forget to turn on your oxygen or don't bag your scrubber. And so the use of checklists, which was a big emphasis a decade ago, I think that has helped. And just awareness, what Gareth Locke from Human Diver calls creating a just culture where we can share our mistakes and all learn from them without blame or judgment. So, I think we've made improvements. Sure.
I think Gareth's doing an amazing job in bringing that forward. Having the balls to say, right, the awkward conversations are the conversations we need to have rather than avoid,
Right.
And it's good.
I just took his in-person seminar. Mm. I had, taken online stuff and read the books, and I met Gareth about a decade ago when he was just getting started. But I took the actual 2-day online seminar. It was fantastic. Yeah. It was really a great experience.
Yeah.
To see all these principles play rather than being lectured about, these various concepts, you could actually see them in play while you work through the simulation with your team.
Yeah. Did you do the asteroid simulation?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. With the gem sim. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fun.
I did the 2-day, it's kind of a tester, isn't it? Or a taster, the essentials, where he's got the 3 to 5 minute videos. Right. And then he was down here holding a course at Bondi Dive Center and asked if I'd like to jump on it and join in.
Okay.
So yeah, fantastic couple of days. And it harped back to my time in the military as well, because, it's heavily weighted, especially in the Air Force, about human factors. And it's, mm-hmm. it's enlightening, to see that people are jumping on board with it and taking it forward. It's really good.
To apply this body of knowledge to, which came out of military and Air Force and to dive.
And see
the results that come out. It's really powerful.
Yeah. And just getting rid of that almost embarrassment factor. Hey, yeah, you're fucked up. Let's have a conversation about it, rather than being sheepish and hiding on the boat,
Right. Have to give a shout out to Stratus Koss with the book Close Calls.
Okay.
If people haven't read that, definitely recommend it. It's in the spirit of human factors, human diver. It's stories of about 66, 67 high profile diving individuals and close calls and mistakes that they made. So, it's a great read.
What's that one called again?
Yeah. The whole idea is if close calls, it's called, yeah, you can Google it. It'll come up, but it's really good reading. And again, about 60 individuals from around the world, you know, people you would know, and mistakes they made. So, and screwed up. I have a story in there, an embarrassing story, but you know, that's the point. You know, we don't go out and plan to screw up or do something stupid and die or get hurt, but we're humans. So we're fallible. And so, errors happen, and we need to create systems so that, as Gareth says, we fail safe. So you screw up, but you don't die as a result. you just get a good lesson and go, holy shit, I won't do that again.
Well, I know you mentioned, seeing I've just picked up on that. You said that you've got a story in the book yourself, and I urge people to go and read the book.
I do.
But let's have it from the horse's mouth. What's the story, brother?
Oh, God. Yeah, my embarrassing story. So, interestingly, it came right after my cave class. So I was up in cave country doing, you know, a recertification with the National Speleological Society cave diving section, you know, diving. We were up there diving. So just had finished that. And I was going to go down to the Keys for a couple of days. And a friend of mine who's a dive instructor and runs the History of Diving Museum down there said, let's go diving. You know, it's like, great. So I think it was in the summer. It was warm, but I just had all my cave gear. So I just brought that. She was a recreational diver, but I didn't have anything else to dive. So, and right before that, like a day or two before, I got a call from Gareth through an email saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for close call stories. If you know of any or have any, you know, let me know. So I didn't respond because I didn't think of anything. Anyway, so long story short, so we were diving on the Spiegel Grove. There's some current. We do our first, and I have a pair of aluminum 80s. I mean, I've been diving 104s and 120s all week. So my mindset was, you know, lots of gas. Aluminum 80s don't have that much gas. But anyway, we went down the deck of the wrecks at about 30 meters. There was some current. We went down, swam around, and came back up. And I was just, I had like half my gas, you know, so equivalent of an aluminum 80. And so we're going to do a second dive. There's no gas to be had on board, no stage bottles, no nothing, no refill. People just, you know, my dive partners swapped out tanks. And I thought, well, you know, I just have this funny feeling like, yeah, that's not really enough gas. But I thought, well, hell, it's a recreational dive. You know, we'll go down 30 miles, swim around a few minutes and come up. No big deal, right? So we go to the, there was peer pressure too, because I hadn't dived with her before. And it's like, you know, what, I'm going to be a dick and go, nah, I'm going to sit up this next dive. I don't have enough gas. So I went. Yeah. So as we were going to jump, she jumped in first, and, as I was about to jump in, the dive master handed me a line and said, do not let go. So I jumped in, and it was like this ripping, I mean, it was like flagpole current, you know, like your mask would move. Yeah. So there was a group decompressing. There were some tech divers decompressing at 3 meters. So we actually literally had to climb over them, because if you let go, you would be history. Yeah, and what's worse is when I jumped in, had a new pair of fins, and my fin came off my foot. It's the strap stayed on, but my foot popped out of the pocket. So so I tried to get it. It's like, there's no way I can deal with this. I have to go down to the bottom, and then I'll fix it. So, you know, we climbed over and climbed down the rope because you couldn't let go. We get to the wreck, and I look, and it's like, you know, 800, 900 PSI. I thought, oh, no, we'll just do a quick and then up, right? But I didn't communicate this well to my partner. And she started swimming off, and there's a door in the wreck that we had done early in the morning. And she's swimming off to go in this door. And it's like, no, no. I'm flashing my light. She didn't respond. Another little fault, another contributing factor, we didn't really go over light signal, you know, I'm tech diver, so I got my light and signals, and she, you know, was a recreational diver. Anyway, she was going in. So I, that decision at that moment saved my life. I think I thought I better go get her. So I swam hard, chased her down, grabbed the fin just as she went inside, you know, said, call the dive. We got to go up. Turned to exit, you know, now gas was getting low and God, it was a long swim. And suddenly I'm breathing and it's like,
oh shit.
It's like, fuck, you know? And, but I had my gauge set. I still had, you know, like 300 or 400 PSI, but it was not coming out, you know? So at that point I had this existential moment of like, holy shit. I can't breathe water. Yeah. What am I going to do? You know? So fortunately she was following me. I hit the line. I signaled out of gas and we shared, her aluminum 80 gas going up. I was horribly embarrassed. Yeah. And it just, you know, it was just one of those. And I was worried still, like getting to the surface. I had no, if we got separated or something happened, you know, there's no buoyancy. I would just drown. So, or we both would. Jesus. So, anyway, I made it to the top. Dive master, are you okay? It's like, no, I'm not fucking okay. I'm out of here. Anyway, and then once I got on board, I had a little gas left. I think it was just a pressure thing. Yeah. So about 2 days later, I woke up in the middle of the night. I was still in the Keys and like in a cold sweat, realizing that, holy shit, you know, I almost died. I could have very easily died in that scenario, you know. So I called Gareth in the middle of the night, which was morning in the UK, and said, Gareth, I got a story for you.
Yeah. So Don't ever ask me for a story again before I go diving.
Right. So what was interesting, though, more interesting, is like within an hour of this happening, I get, you know, just because I'm a known person, already in cave country, I got a call from my instructor, one of my instructors saying, I heard you had a little drama today. So interesting, too, on the question of just culture. So I got my cave card sent to me, and I was supposed to get a double card, an agency which shall go unnamed. I done the class, and I was going to get both cave from both of them, but I never got the agency card. And so eventually I called that instructor and I said, I was supposed to get the card. What happened? He goes, well, we heard about your little incident and we don't feel you're ready for a cave card yet. Yeah. You need to do a little more work before you get it. It was like, ouch.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, that's the story. Yeah.
Oh dear.
Judgment.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, that's that
anyway,
so judging after the course is done.
Right. You know, so, you know, I never thought I would run out of gas, but you can definitely run out of gas.
No, well, thankfully you were diving with a woman. You know, she's probably got a full tank still when you're out. Plenty of air to share.
Yeah, no, she was very cool. Lisa, my friend Lisa. Yeah, she was very cool and was there and did all the right stuff. So again, that could have been a disaster situation if she had not followed me back and I turned around and there was no one there. Yeah. I guess I could have gone for the surface, but that would not be so good either.
Yeah.
And I would have been, and with the current, that would have been it. I've never seen the boat.
Passing your way to Mexico. Yeah.
Right.
So what's, on your diving front, have you got a particular style of diving that you prefer? Do you go out and seek cave diving more than anything
else? More and more I find, I'm more a cave diver, I think, than a ship. Shipwrecks are cool. I guess I'm more a natural person. Nature, caves, reefs, walls. I like that stuff more. I found in my later years, I was up in Canada diving this spring. It was like 6 degrees, and I didn't have heat. You know, I just had all my underwear, my underwear on. I find warm water diving is really not. I like the warm. I'm becoming more of a wimp diver, more of a recreational tech creation diver, I think, in my old age. But I just love being in the water. I mean, I'm a free diver as well, baby free diver and swimmer. Mm. It's just great. You know, just being in the waters.
Yeah. Good. It's my zen place. I mean, even if I'm not diving, I tend to go down to the pool and just, if I've got a lot of things to think about and what I've got to do for the week, I just do 50, 100 laps and think about everything and just get the head in the right space. Good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can totally relate to that. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Canada. I was only having a chat last week with a good mate of mine, Phil. He started out as a customer of mine, and then he's turned into a good buddy. And he lives in Canada and works in the oil fields, and you know it's bloody cold. And COVID has forced him into having to dive in Canada. So he's gone from seeking out warm water diving with me all the time to having to get a dry suit on and having to go in cold water. And he's actually started to enjoy it, to my surprise. Yeah. I think.
I mean, cold water diving is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and there's certainly some great, incredible places. But it is nice and easier just to be in a skin, you know,
oh, warm. Yeah. And we're heading out to Indonesia in December. Me and the missus just have a couple of weeks out there. 30 degrees every day. I don't know, 16 to 23 degree water. Perfect. That'll do for me.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So let's jump on to the rebreather form.
Ah, the rebreather form. Yeah, yeah. So, so this is a meeting really bringing together industry people, vendors, instructors, people professionally involved with rebreathers, and then the science community. There'll be a science meeting at its core, and it's really to help move our knowledge forward, our understanding of rebreather technology and its uses, with the goal of improving safety and performance. Mm. You know, there's been a lot of research and works from over the last 10 years since the last one. At that time, 10 years ago, sport diving, the rebreather community was a bit of a crisis in that there was a lot of fatalities. In fact, Dr. Andrew Falk from Melbourne, I believe he's based in, a hyperbaric doc and a rebreather diver, did a paper for the forum that estimated, and you've probably heard these stats, that diving a rebreather, you're 10 times more likely to die diving a rebreather than open circuit scuba. So anyway, there's been a lot of new science. I think safety, as we've talked about, has improved. You know, some of the initiatives like checklists we want to revisit. And the new one, of course, is mouthpiece retaining straps. Mm-hmm. These are standard in military rebreather diving. And the idea is if you lose consciousness, you won't lose your mouthpiece and drown immediately. So you're savable at that point. So there's been, again, work on that. And there's a question of the efficacy of these things. But again, there's been work on that, looking at full face masks as well with like the Thai rescue. There's new technologies, solid state sensors have improved, other things. So it's a time to get people together and kind of go through the science. My science team for this is Dr. Simon Mitchell, Dr. Neil Pollack, Dr. Fraka Tillman from Dan World, and John Clark from the Navy Experimental Diving Unit. He's the retired scientific
director.
So they put together the program, and the idea is we'll have kind of the best people representing all these different topics within rebreather diving, focused on safety, physiology, the technology itself, and then training. So we expect about 300 people, give or take. We're going to video it, as well as have a scientific proceedings. Mm. The video won't be live video, but after the event, we'll have on-demand video to be available for people.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so the purpose is really to kind of advance the community's use and the military. We're really featuring the groups that use rebreathers, which are tech divers, scientific divers, and military divers. Mm. I mean, commercial divers have some use of rebreathers, but it's basically a bailout system for SAP divers. So, which is very different than diving a rebreather.
Yeah.
So we'll have those communities represented and we're going to hold it in Malta this year. The first three rebreather forums were held in the U.S. and it just seemed like a good time to get out of the U.S. and, Europe. Dan Europe is a client of mine. Editor with them, etc. So they seemed a natural group to host to be one of our hosts. So they're a sponsor. Dan in the U.S. is a sponsor. Patty and Heritage Malta, which is a quasi-government organization that controls the cultural resources, manages them like shipwrecks. Yeah. So we'll have good shipwreck diving along with the scientific.
There's some great shipwreck diving out there, isn't there?
Yeah. Some historic wrecks, because they were in the middle of all the shipping channels from, you know, antiquity forward.
And are you going to have representatives from people that are putting this technology to use? So I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like the likes of Matt Carter with the Marine Projects Foundation, and, you know.
I talked to him. I think he's going to be there. We'll have vendors there too. I should say we'll have an exhibit area for people to bring their rebreathers, and there'll be, you know, we have a pool for demos and try dives and the like. So yeah,
I think
it'll be kind of the professional leadership, if you will, of the dive on the sports side, the sport industry, and
not necessarily needing people there that use the stuff. I mean, the people that are going to be there are going to know how it's used anyway, aren't they?
Yeah. Right. Well, so there'll be both users, some of the top explorers. I mean, people like Richard Harris and Craig Challen from the Wet Mules. One of our presenters is going to be Andy Pitkin, who's an anesthesiologist and an explorer with the Karst Underwater Research. They're doing these huge, big push dives in Florida and in the U.S., we'll have some of the military. Kevin Gurr, probably someone you've heard of, had developed rebreathers, and now he actually has developed a military rebreather. He works for Avon Protection and works kind of on the military side. So he'll be there, people like that. So it should be.
Sounds awesome. Yeah. And is there an after party? Are you and Bill Stone going to be up on stage with guitars in hand again?
Playing guitar. That was so fun playing with Bill at Aztec. There will be a banquet evening, and we'll have some music. I don't know. We'll maybe have to invite the Aztecs to come and play with Bill. Bill's going to be underground. Unfortunately, every spring, the reason we were able to get Bill to come to Aztec this year was because it was in the fall. Like every spring, Bill is underground. It's Sistema Chev or Watla. Yeah. You know, exploring. So he'll be there during the rebreather for him. So we won't be able to get him to come.
I think that guy lives underground.
He's amazing. Bill's definitely one of my
favorites. Yeah. I enjoyed watching his presentation. And unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to talk to him one-on-one, but maybe at some point in the future. Maybe even get him on the show. You never know.
He'd be a good one on your pod.
Yeah.
He'd be a good one on studio.
Yeah. But you guys go back a fair way, eh?
We do. No, he was early on, one of my heroes from early on, and Wakulla Springs. That was really, you know, out of nowhere. It was sort of like a from zero to hero. I mean, a moonshot in the early tech days. You know, we had Air Products as a sponsor, and I have that book still, the Wakulla Springs Project 1987. That was like our Bible. We just pour over it and annotate it and for a long time. So I got to meet him early in the day, along with people like Sheck Exley and others. So it was a very, very heady time. Bill was in our closed circuit. Each issue of AquaCore was themed, and this was the rebreather issue, C2. And so I had a big interview with Bill called Stone, and that was in that issue. So, and in fact, I remember this, my weird mind. It was the first issue that we used the word fuck in the issue, because Bill in his interview said fuck. And so we thought, well, we're an adult dive magazine, so we should run it. So we did.
I've got into the habit now. Nowadays, I click that E for explicit on every podcast that I put out, because I think the word fuck is just used in common day, everyday language nowadays. It's not the 1980s where you get a slap around the back of the head from some old boy for using it in the high street, you know?
Right. So we can
Out. Yeah. Or just leave it in if it works. Bollocks to it.
Bollocks, yeah.
Happy days.
Yeah.
So what's next on the agenda for you? Obviously, you've got the forum coming up.
I'm just trying to get through the year. Lots of travel this year. We're actually headed to, I'm headed on Saturday, to Florida for the GUE conference. And they'll be showcasing a new, kind of a new level of training called Project Diver. And this is training not just to go diving, but to say you want to organize an expedition on your shipwrecks. How do you go about doing that? Like, what do you need? How do you do it? So it's, training on that. And then going to the GUE conference. And then, of course, DEMA is right after that. So I'll be at DEMA. And then at the end of November, I'm headed to Malta to do a site visit to kind of get all our final arrangements and stuff.
So what you mean is you're going to go and look at a big hall and then spend 5 days diving shipwrecks? I got you.
Sort of, yeah. Exactly. I made a decision a bunch of years ago about 4 or 5 years ago now that I was just going to do diving stuff, no corporate stuff. And I mostly stuck to that. And I'm just very happy and grateful to be doing this. It's just, I think we have an extraordinary community and, you know, it's just really happy to be a part of it. So
it's a great community. I mean, just, it's the happy place. You know, it's good people surrounding, you know, and it doesn't matter. It's a great, I see diving as a great leveler. Everybody's a diver, and when you're under the water, you're just equal, you know? And I love that about it. Absolutely love it. Right, matey, I should sign off and let you get to dinner. Is it a dinner date tonight, or are you just having a normal one?
I do. Dinner date, some reservations.
Well, I hope it goes well for you.
This has been so good talking. I feel like we could probably go on for another hour so easily.
So easy. And tell everybody, anyone you come across, if they want to come on the show and they've got stuff to talk about, let's do it. I just love putting it out there. Yeah. Great. Everybody's welcome.
Great. Yes.
Hey guys, if you would like to know more about the content that Michael produces, you can click in the links in the show notes, or you can head on over to the usual social media sites. And also, the in-depth magazine can be found on the GUE website at GUE.com/blog or indepth.log. And you'll find more of Michael's awesome content over on the Dan Europe website. Now, if you've enjoyed today's show, don't forget to share that love with your dive buddies and let them know that we exist. If you're feeling really generous, then we would be eternally grateful for a review on Apple or Spotify. A like, a follow, and a share all go a very long way to letting us know that we're doing the right thing. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you well on your date tonight.
Yeah.
Ace it, brother. And
thank you.
Let's keep in touch and let me know how it all goes with Malta.
Sounds good. I'll definitely do that. Yes. Thank you.
Happy days.
Yep.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and see you next time. Ciao for now.
This is Scuba Goat Under the Sea, the podcast for the inquisitive diver.